This is the NC State Tripartisan Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now here's your host for the NC State Tripartisan Podcast from InsidePacSports.com, James Henderson.
Welcome back to the Tripartisan NC State Podcast. And today we're going to spend a lot of time talking NC State hoops. I want to talk some women's basketball and some men's basketball. We haven't had a chance to really spend a lot of time talking about the job Wes Moore is doing right now with NC State's women's program, and we're going to talk about that today as well. We have plenty more, I mean, on these podcasts going forward on football and other sports, but I really want to kind of make this one a hoops-dedicated podcast. So let's first start with women's basketball, and I really think if I had to pick a coach who I would say right now at NC State might be doing the best job with this program, it could be Wes Moore. I mean, he is, in my opinion, one of the best women's basketball coaches in the country. I think there's no doubt about it. I think if you ask other coaches around that sport, they'll tell you the same. Where he has taken this program is really remarkable. When you look at how strong the ACC is right now in women's basketball, and State's been back-to-back Sweet 16, two Sweet 16s back-to-back. Right now, they're undefeated. They're ranked ninth in the country. They lead the ACC 14-0. Started the year off started the conference playoff with two nice wins against Virginia and Virginia Tech. And they're now going on the road this week to play North Carolina Thursday, and then at Notre Dame, who has slipped a little bit this year. But I think this is a program at NC State now where they're just so consistent. I think that would be the best word to describe the program under Wes Moore is they're consistent. You know, they rarely lose games they should lose. And when you do that, well, I don't say should lose. I apologize. They rarely lose games they shouldn't win. And when you do that, you're going to be very successful. You just are. Because the level or the standard of excellence within your program will just continue to rise, and the expectations will continue to rise. And that's why right now they're 3-0 in conference play and 14-0 overall. It's because they hold themselves accountable and they challenge themselves each game, and they rarely lose games they should lose. And so they've got two big matchups this week. Obviously, the first is against North Carolina, a rival in Chapel Hill, Thursday night. North Carolina is 11-3 overall, 2-1 in conference play. So they've had a nice start to the year, looking to really rebuild that program this year. You know, longtime coach Sylvia Hatchell is no longer over there running things at North Carolina. They went out and I think they made in my opinion, a very, very good hire by hiring Courtney Banghart from Princeton. I mean, she's doing a really good job over there at North Carolina. Young coach, just 41 years old. And I think she has a chance to build that program back, because obviously in North Carolina you've got a strong brand that you can sell, and her resume speaks for itself at Princeton. You know, 7-time Ivy League and champion. You know, she was a Naismith National Coach of the Year in 2015. So she's, you know, very impressive in terms of what she was able to do there at Princeton, which obviously isn't known as a powerhouse in women's basketball nationally, but she did a great job there. So she's got North Carolina playing well, 11-3. And I think NC State, though, is a team that they're just, like I said, they're consistent. They go out and take care of business when they're supposed to. And I think this week's going to be a big test for that, to see if they can do that again this year. Because you go on the road and play a rivalry game against North Carolina, this will be her first matchup in this rivalry. So I know she's going to be looking to try and make a statement. And then you go and play Notre Dame, who, you know, currently is 12th in the league at 1-2 overall, and just 6-9 overall and 1-2 in conference play. But we all know Notre Dame is dangerous. I mean, Notre Dame is a team that has talent. They always do under Muff McGraw. And I think this is a game that State is going to have to try and take care of business in as well. But if you could get out of these two games at 5-0 and really set yourself up going forward, you know, it's going to be big. It's going to be big for NC State. And like I said, I think Wes Moore is doing a really good job over there. I mean, they have a lot of pieces to be successful. this year. And it starts with Elisa Cunane, their center. I mean, I think she is one, I think she's one of the best players in the country. I mean, I don't know where her numbers stack up against everybody else in college, in women's basketball. But, you know, if you look at what she's doing right now at NC State, I mean, she was just named ACC Player of the Week, for her play in the first two conference, and well, not, I keep saying the first two conference games. Obviously, they played a conference game earlier, but we're really getting into the heart of conference play right now. And the back-to-back games against the two Virginia teams, I mean, she was outstanding. I mean, she averaged 27 points, 9.5 rebounds, shooting 65% from the field and 91% at the free throw line. You know, it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, she leads the conference in shooting percentage at 65% and leads NC State in scoring right around 18 points and 10 rebounds per game. So, and in rebounds. So she's been a dominant force in the post and just a sophomore. I mean, they really have that pillar piece going forward to where if you're State and you're Wes Moore, and you know, in women's basketball, players generally stay through their senior season. So you have a sophomore 6'5" center who you can legitimately build your program around the next 3 years. And she was outstanding as a freshman last year when she got thrust into the lineup, and it's only carried over to this year. And her consistency is what makes her, I think, special. I mean, I keep going back to that word with everything really relative to this program, but her shooting percentage is always there. She rebounds the basketball. She scores. You know, if you give it to her, she makes the right play. I mean, she's a winning type basketball player. And I think she's kind of that core foundational piece that now, if you're State, you can just build around, you know, and they're starting to do that. Jada Boyd, a freshman, is really, really good. Ja'Kia Brown Turner, another freshman, a McDonald's All-American. She's really, really good. You know, Kayla Jones has stepped up as a wing for them. And then obviously they're strong at guard. Kai Crutchfield from Raleigh has emerged here into a steady performer at guard, and their recruiting has picked up. They're going to only land, I think, more talented players. So I think Wes Moore has this program on the cusp of being one of the top programs in the ACC. Well, it's already one of the top programs in the ACC. And so if you're already there, you're one of the top programs in the country. Like I said, back-to-back Sweet 16 appearances. They're ranked in the top 10 this year. They ranked in the top 10 for much of last season. So he's got an opportunity now. And I think the next step is win that ACC title. Win a regular season title, win a conference title, find a way to bring home some hardware. And I think State has the pieces in place to do that this year. Men's basketball. Let's talk about Kevin Keats and his team right now. You know, I think coming off I wouldn't say it's a surprising loss. You know, Clemson was a team, if you step back and look at them, I feel like they were really due to get a win. You know, they were 0-3 in conference play. Had lost their ACC opener at home to Virginia Tech by 7. Had a midweek game last week and lost in overtime at home to Miami. So they were due a loss, they were due a win. And I think they did the things capable or needed to win that basketball game. You know, when I watched it back, I just kept going to the common theme that it felt like Clemson was doing everything that you need to do to win a basketball game. That's considered kind of a toss-up game. And you got to remember, NC State was playing this game without C.J. Bryce, who was their leading scorer, their leading rebounder. He's one of the better shooting guards in the ACC in terms of field goal percentage. And so that's a big piece to take out of your rotation and to not have for a road conference game. So I thought this game could be tricky for NC State for that reason, and it was. But still, I think a lot of that credit should go to Clemson because they shot the basketball well. I mean, this was a team that hadn't been shooting it well. They hit 9 threes against NC State. They hadn't been shooting free throws well. They shot 86% at the free throw line and outscored NC State by 13 points at the free throw line. You know, like I said earlier, I mean, they shot it well from three. They outscored State by 12 points from the 3-point line. They were better in transition. They had more second chance points. They had more points off turnovers. Look, if you win all those categories, and I mean, like everything I just mentioned, that's like 6 categories. If you win all of those, you're winning the basketball game. Now, again, they weren't winning all of them by a ton, but they were winning them. And if you didn't check all those boxes, you're going to win a game, especially a conference game at home. And so I think that's the thing. That's my takeaway from this game for NC State. You know, I think this is a league in the ACC right now where it's going to be, I think, each night out, you feel like you've got a chance to win or lose against whoever you play. And normally it's not like that. Normally you've got kind of a drop off at the bottom and sort of separation at the top. And look, I know Virginia and Duke are undefeated in ACC play right now, 3-0 or 4-0. I don't have the standing in front of me, but there's still I don't think that gap is what it had been in previous years. And that's based on seeing those teams play out of conference and even in conference. I mean, I think you feel like if you go and play Virginia this year, this isn't last year's Virginia team. Now, Virginia's off to a good start, like I said, but I think there's a chance there that you can get wins against these teams that maybe, you know, that felt more unlikely in previous seasons. And it's the same thing for the bottom of the conference standings. I mean, I think if you go and look at the standings and even look at the bottom, I mean, you've got teams at the bottom now who North Carolina is 1-2, Syracuse is 1-2, you know, Notre Dame is 1-2, Virginia Tech is 1-2. I mean, what's funny is NC State is 1-2 right now, and they're a game out of third place in the league. I mean, Florida State's 3-1. Their game was, what's that, a game and a half. So Florida State's 3-1, but they've already got a conference loss. I mean, you've only got two teams right now without a loss in ACC play through three games. I mean, that's that's as wide open as it gets. And, I mean, I think this is a year where on a 20-game schedule, 12-8 might be fourth place in the league this year. So State just needs to get on a roll and find a way to start winning games. And obviously that Clemson loss, I think, is disappointing if you step back and look at where Clemson was from a ranking standpoint. But each game is going to be a dogfight. And I didn't think State played well enough to win that game. I thought Markell Johnson really struggled in terms of being a primary playmaker for NC State. I mean, I feel like he has to play better than he did in that game. And it happens, though. You know, every game you don't play your best. Every game you don't play average. Every game you're not bad. And so I think this was just a game where he didn't play well. I mean, he finished with 7 assists, but he had 6 turnovers. You know, he finished with, I think, 11 points, but he was on 5 of 15 shooting from the field. I mean, that's not what vintage Markell Johnson has been the previous two seasons. I mean, he's been a guy who's been efficient from the field, and his assist to turnover ratio was not essentially 1-1. I mean, he's a guy who's been around that 7-8 assists, 2-3 turnovers a night. And that's where he needs to get back to being. And I think he's going to do that. I think he just needs to settle down, focus, and get back to playing, you know, the way he was playing previously. And so what do I mean by that? Well, one of the things I've noticed from him in terms of shooting the basketball this year is he's been much more aggressive shooting off the dribble versus catch and shoot. And those are two completely different shots. Anybody that has played basketball or coached basketball, they know that, you know, shooting off the dribble is a different shot than shooting on the catch. And most of your spot up shooters are really good shooters, and most of your spot up shots are your better shots versus trying to shoot the basketball off the dribble. And his ratio's kind of gotten out of control this year. I mean, I went back and looked. Last year, he attempted 68 catch and shoot jumpers, and he attempted 85 shots off the dribble. So again, that ratio is still a little slanted towards more shots off the dribble, but that's fine. I mean, he's a guy who's State's primary ball handler. He's going to often be the guy at the end of the shot clock who's going to have to create and take a shot and make a shot for himself. So we get it. He's going to be taking some, you know, a higher number of shots off the dribble. He's a point guard. He's their primary playmaker. So he's not going to be passing the ball to himself. So generally, he's the guy making the pass to the open player, not being the guy to receive it. I understand that. But that ratio is 68 to 85. This year, that ratio has slanted a lot more towards shots off the dribble. And I think if I'm State, I'm pointing those numbers out to Johnson. This year, he's only taken 18 catch and shoot jump shots, and he's taken 48 shots off the dribble. So that's double the catch and shoot jumpers, whereas that number clearly wasn't double last year when I said it was 68 to 85. So he's not taking the same variety of shots that he was taking previously when he was a much more efficient shooter. And this year he's still shooting the shots off the, you know, the catch and shoot jumpers at a reliable rate. He's right around 40%, which is a good to very good number on catch and shoot jump shots. He's shooting 50% on unguarded catch and shoot jumpers, which is great. That's outstanding to knock down 50% of your catch and shoot shots. problem is he's only shooting 27% on his off the dribble jump shots. So he's taking more of the inefficient shot within his offense. So how does he improve as a shooter now if he wants to step back and really work on his game? Well, he says, okay, I'm going to try and limit my off the dribble jumpers, and I'm going to try and look to take more catch and shoot jump shots. So if I'm State, if I'm Markel Johnson, that's the adjustment I try to make. I try to take more off the dribble, I try to take more catch and shoot jump shots and less off the dribble jump shots. As a playmaker, he has to stay aggressive, but he has to continue to try and limit his turnovers. I think that's an area where he has to focus on as well. Another thing I want to talk about is I don't think we saw a lot of positives from NC State's lineup when they went with their big lineup, when they played DJ Funderburk and Manny Bates together. I know a lot of fans have been wanting to see that lineup, and they've had to see it more with CJ Bryce out. But I don't think that's an ideal lineup for NC State. And the reason I say that is because I think there's multiple reasons. First of all, this is a space game now in terms of offensively and defensively. You're asking players to have to be able to play in space. And that's why you don't see a lot of teams play big anymore. You know, you don't see teams go 7 foot at center and 6'10 at power forward like we're asking State to do with that lineup. And the reason is because, one, you're not posting up a lot. So I went back and looked. I think NC State had 2 post-ups in the game against Clemson. Just 2. So if you're not posting up a lot, then that means those bigs are having to play away from the basket. So so offensively, would you feel more comfortable with a 7-footer playing away from the basket or a 6'5 guard? Probably a 6'5 guard. And so from a spacing standpoint, it's not ideal. Secondly, I think defensively, you really create problems asking both of those guys to defend out in space. It's fine to have one in there because most teams are going to have one big on the court. So it's fine to have one in there as a defender and then a rim protector. But when I was watching back the Clemson game, it felt like when they were both on the court, they both had the tendency to squeeze and protect the rim, which would open the door for some open three-point shots by the opposition. And that's scary. That's not ideal against teams that really are hunting 3-point shots now. So I think defensively, it's been a problem as well. And so I think that's something State's going to try and work on with those guys is when they're out on the court together to make sure they stay stuck to their man whenever they're on the perimeter and trust that the other will be there as a rim protector to try and, you know, limit 3-point shots. I mean, I thought at times against Clemson, it felt like State got caught in positions where they had 3 defending the basketball. And defensively, from a principal standpoint, you rarely want to be in a position where you have 3 men around 1. Because that's gonna put a lot of stress on your rotations. And I thought State got caught with that a couple times with those 2 guys on the court together. And it led to open 3-point opportunities for Clemson, who, even though they don't shoot it well, they knocked it down in that game. And that's going to be a really, really, I think, big concern going into this next game, because up next for NC State is Notre Dame. And Notre Dame is one of the better 3-point shooting teams in the ACC. They just went and won at Syracuse, hit 15 out of 31 3-pointers. I mean, I don't care who you are. If you knock down 15 out of 31 threes, you're going to have a chance to win that game, and you're likely winning it. And they did that. They went up and beat Syracuse by one point. Yeah, they barely were able to get it done. Now, the reason being, Syracuse shot 15 for 31 as well. So that was a 3-point exhibition. Both of those teams were shooting the ball well in that game, and Notre Dame was able to get the win. And I think this is a dangerous game for NC State because State struggled this year at times defending the 3-point line. And that's going to have to be an area of focus against Notre Dame. I think State needs the work to really run Notre Dame off the 3-point line. You know, when you go and look at Notre Dame statistically, they don't shoot a great percentage from 3. I mean, they're shooting 35% from 3, which is 99th in the country. But what they do is they take a ton of 3s, which means they make a ton of 3s, regardless of how many they're shooting or regardless of the percentage they're shooting. But they're taking 29.5 3s per game, which is the 7th most in the country. They're making 10.3, which is the 7th most in the country. So their percentage is almost, you don't want to say it's irrelevant, but their goal is simple. They're trying to take a ton of 3s and make more than you make. So they're taking 10, they're making 10.3, and their opponents are making 8. Now, 8's a high number, so they're giving up a lot of made 3s too. But that's their goal. They want to win the 3-point game. They want to outscore you from the 3-point line. And then the other thing they do is they do not send you to the free throw line. They are allowing just 6.8 made free throws per game. That's the fewest in the country. So they are not beating themselves in terms of fouling and sending teams to the free throw line. So defensively, they're making you earn everything defensively. You know, you're going to have to score in your half court. You're going to have to score in transition because you're not going to get cheap points at the free throw line. They're not going to allow you to flop your way and try and really get to the free throw line. They're going to play sound fundamental defense and make you beat them by knocking down shots. And defensively, they've done well. I mean, they're allowing teams to shoot 39.2% from the field, which is in the top 50 in the country. And so this is going to be, a tough test for NC State, but I think it's a game where NC State can win because I do think they match up well with Notre Dame. I mean, I think they play well in these free-flowing type games where the other team is trying to play. And I don't mean that like sarcastically. I don't mean that as a joke. I mean it really kind of literal. I mean, I think teams like Clemson and teams like Virginia, you know, teams that really try and Georgia Tech try and muddy the game up. They want it to be a low possession type game. They don't want you to run. They don't want to get out in transition a ton. Those teams tend to give State trouble because that's how State wants to play, obviously. State wants to play in transition. State wants to have a high possession game. State wants to play a game that scored in the 80s and 90s. And that's not really how those teams want to play. Now, Notre Dame, they're averaging 76 points per game. They do shoot a ton of threes. They do get out and try and run in transition. So this is a game that I think is conducive to how State wants to play, which I think is encouraging for State coming off of that Notre Dame, you know, coming off of that Clemson game where they didn't really play well and wasn't able to get out and run and do the things they like to do. I mean, in that game, NC State had zero fast break points. I don't remember that ever happening under Kevin Keats or Markell Johnson in the lineup. I mean, they to not get any fast break points, that's discouraging. And I thought a lot of that was because of the job Clemson did in getting back in transition, but also State didn't take advantage of those opportunities when they were there. And so that's something to look for in this game. Are they going to be able to get their transition game going? So we'll have more on NC State this week or next week on the podcast looking at NC State hoops. I'm sure we're going to have some football talk as well. They have an opening now on the defensive line, which we referenced in the previous podcast. Maybe that's filled by then. If it is, we'll talk about that also. And my column this week is going to be on this game. You know, it's going to be on the outcome of this game. So I haven't come up with a topic yet. I'm going to let NC State decide that topic for me because I think this is a big game for NC State. And so I plan on writing that column after the game's over and getting that posted on at WRL Sports Fan on the Tripartisan. You can find it under the Tripartisan tab at the WRL Sports Fan. You can find it on my website. I have a link there as well at InsidePackSports.com. So for this edition of the Tripartisan NC State Podcast, my name's James Henderson. Make sure you join me again next time.
You've been listening to the NC State Tripartisan Podcast with host from InsidePackSports.com, James Henderson. Don't forget there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app, and you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. Thanks again for listening to the NC State Tripartisan Podcast.